This is Pure Decking for Thursday. What the hell is today? The 14th?
15th.
16th for me.
This is Thursday, somewhere in time. We're at Gen Con, and I've got everybody in the fucking room. What's wrong?
Close the window.
Oh, we've got a window open.
And turn the aircon off. Heavy is struggling to close the window. Right now, Heavy is moving to the window. He's slightly folded the chair. The window appears to be jammed as he's knocked it off its axis. There it goes. Oh, look at that. Heavy's got it in position. And the air conditioner's off. And the chair is back down, ladies and gentlemen.
Yay. Wow. Okay. This is Pure Decking for Thursday, August the 15th. 2013. This is the show about the most depressing news stories documenting our decline into a police state that I could find. I'm Morps, and tonight I have everyone. I mean, fucking everyone is in the room. Laser, Sard, Suave, Fox, RU, Heavy, BSV, Madman. I probably left somebody out.
Me, asshole.
Yes, we even have Big Brother. Hi. He's sitting behind me. I can't see him.
So. Hey.
Oh, yeah, RU's here too. So.
You better ask me what I'm fucking drinking tonight, fucker.
RU, what are you drinking tonight?
I am drinking domestic to the disgust of the rest of the crowd in this room who are all beer snobs. And you all go fuck off as far as I'm concerned. I apologize for my language on this Pure Decking this evening because I'm in the room with everybody else and it's my turn to drink on the shows. Usually I've got a big black
cock in his mouth.
Oh, damn it. 4 minutes in.
I left it open because I knew one of you bastards would go there. No, I'm not drinking coffee tonight. I'm drinking Budweiser, the king of beers, apparently. But if I scrape it off, it says the king of bee. And I become... I'm not even going to go there. Anyway, back to your host, Morps.
I've got myself a BBC Amber Ale. Anybody else got an alcoholic beverage they wish to announce? Suave takes a big swig of his Budweiser.
That's disgusting.
I've got a magic hat, blind faith.
Nice. Is everybody else noticing how much better everyone sounds without having to go through freaking TeamSpeak?
Yeah. So clear.
Sorry, I did try and tune every mic to everybody's voice, but I couldn't get around. We will get around to doing it for the I Have Nothing, because... this show was a little bit premature after ribs I had tonight. I'd just like to thank Texas Steakhouse for their fantastic ribs, and I'd love to be a mascot for them. That's right, I'll dress up for you and dance around with a sign because I'm moving to America. That's right, I'm not going home. I'm going to be holding a sign on some sort of intersection somewhere dressed up as a mascot in a really hot costume until winter, until I become chronically unemployed, a meth addict, and yeah... Great.
Welcome to America.
America. So, fuck yeah.
So as far as the discussion topic for Decking tonight, I thought we'd talk about traveling with all this technology, because I'm jazzed at how well the mobile rig up is working. So, I mean, everyone's hooked up. Everyone who's got a mic who wants one, I think.
Maybe. I think we put it together.
To give everyone an idea of what we've got, what all did you bring?
We've got two Yamaha mixers piped together into a couple of Plow headphone amps so that everybody can hear everything. Got a Zoom H4n recording the output of everything, and I've got a MacBook Pro that I borrowed without authorization from work.
Pretentious.
Pretentious. The room is 45% more pretentious because of the stolen MacBook, and we got that. The MacBook is running all the audio. It's running the broadcast. We're hoping the hotel Wi-Fi can keep up, and so. Of course, everybody brought mics, everybody brought headsets, we were able to wire it all together. We've only had a few dead cords, which is actually fantastic. And as you can tell, you can hear us now, mostly. Unless the stream is cut out because the internet hotel or the hotel's internet connection sucks.
Downloaded poor fags.
Yeah. So, of course, we all brought various gear, so I had a fairly easy time of it. My worst problem was getting all this stuff into a box and getting it to fit in the back of my car with everybody else's crap. So we drove. but everybody else here flew. So how'd you all handle getting all your shit through the airport? Because we got laptops, tablets, cell phones, all kinds of crazy ass stuff that all somebody would need is like, you're a terrorist, and boom, dead. I mean, just right there, shoot him. It's like, oh, he's got a laptop, shoot him.
I wrapped all of my tech in Galaxy 15 radio shirts.
Yes. Oh, we should talk about the shirts. Who actually ordered them?
I got them all.
Okay, Fox. He showed up. Fox showed up with these Galaxy 15 radio shirts that say the internet, here be porn and free shit on the front and Galaxy 15 radio on the back. They are awesome. And so we put these things on. Every one of us was wearing one of these things. And we were walking around Gen Con as the internet white boy mafia.
We looked like a fucking gang, and we were badasses.
We scared a couple of tellers at the CVS pharmacy earlier.
We did.
So, yeah, I mean, just freaking amazing. Actually, it blows my mind that a joke I made 4 years ago ends up on a t-shirt and we're all walking around wearing it.
Just like
that,
the tagline.
I've got to go as being the IHN bitch boy around here because I'm not good enough. I've got to go and get our laundry out of the... I'll be back.
Wow.
We washed them so we can wear them again.
But, I mean, did anybody have any problems getting their gear here? Really?
I was actually pretty shocked on that. I was expecting the TSA love glove treatment for going through with all these wires and hookups and everything. Didn't bat a freaking eye. I think the best thing to do is to separate each piece of your tech out, wrap it individually in a piece of clothing so they can see it really clearly on the X-ray machine. Oh, that's a fucking microphone. Oh, that's microphone wire. No big deal. And that way you don't have to turn your head and cough twice.
You put it all into one big bundle, and you're going to have a nice day.
Yeah, especially if you got like random wires coming out of it. It's like, I mean, loose wires, they assume it's a bomb. I mean.
But if the wires were loose on the bomb, would the bomb be broken?
Hell, I don't know these things.
But it had a wire. It was scary.
Usually the wires on the outside of a bomb are all fail-safe triggers anyway, so. But
note to everyone, don't just like randomly grab your cable and jam it into your bag as wherever it fits, because yeah, that's how you end up with dead cables apparently.
So,
and also always bring backup cables if you can, because you never know when one might decide it's going to heaven.
Well, I mean, I brought all these extra cords and hookups and adapters because I honestly had no idea what we were going to need. I really didn't, because I didn't know what everybody else was bringing.
And hats off to Fry's Electronics for providing some of the adapters that we are using this evening. We are going to keep saying your name until you pay us to stop.
So, I don't know. Does anybody got anything with the traveling they want to bring up as far as getting their gear here? Because I guess it sounds like it's a lot easier than it used to be. I know last time I flew, of course, I had like Arduinos and project boxes and a couple of laptops with me. Of course, they looked at me. It's like, you're the fucking Unabomber, aren't you? I mean, it's just... I had to tear my bag apart and just forever.
Well, audio gear and electronics in general are kind of separate entities, aren't they?
Well, you know, I think it's getting more common that they'll see people bringing, you know, two or three microphones, maybe even a mixer, a bunch of wire, a couple of laptops. I think that's starting to get common enough that...
culture has brought that up,
yeah.
I would think so.
Because everybody's doing what we're doing now. I mean, if you're knitting, you're doing a podcast about it nowadays. So it's so common that you basically are going to have that equipment with a lot of people. Maybe a microphone just to talk to people on the internet and, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
Not to mention cell phone technology and all these associated handheld devices. You got your tablets, you got your laptops, you got your cell phones, you got X, Y, and Z that, you know, just becoming more common, more commonplace instead of more, you know, edge tech.
Yeah, so this is, I guess it's not even odd to bring all this kind of stuff anymore, because I was thinking it was kind of cool how we all had these USB batteries and a travel router and everything else to get everything working smoothly.
Yeah.
You know, that's one thing I really like. It's, you know, we've got all these mobile devices now, and, you know, like back even 2 years ago, you know, traveling around with a laptop, you get to take the charger and keyboard and cables and all this other sort of stuff. And, you know, this year I just brought a tablet, and that does exactly everything I need it to do, and it's none of the hassle. It's this little tiny book-sized device, and that's it.
And we get to play Carmageddon on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't have any problem. I had a laptop, a tablet, a network switch, a bunch of Cat 5, cell phone charger, two cell phones, all sorts of stuff, and No problem.
All right. Well, I kind of threw this one together on the fly, so we may end up with a bit of a short show. But if we don't really have anything else to throw on this topic, it's the only thing I come up with on the top of my head. We can go on to some of our current events.
I mean, you might talk about how we all protected some of our other cables in shipping, wrapping up things individually in clothing items or something like that, so that when the ever-so-loving airport staff move your bag gently from the plane to the conveyor belt, your shit doesn't get broken.
Thud.
I got around all that. I just shipped my microphone to the hotel we're staying at, picked it up whenever we checked in.
No, why'd you ship it? That seems odd.
It is. I've got a shitload of stuff in my bag, and the microphone and the huge damn cable that's dead. Just too much.
Oh, it was a weight thing. Okay.
Yeah.
So you let FedEx drop it once and kick it twice for you instead of the plane you were on.
Hey, it's working. You can hear me, right?
That's true.
Actually, I'm not wearing headphones.
He's not wearing headphones.
Oh, did we run out of headphone ports?
No, I think we still got ports. Just
got three.
Oh, well, okay. Well, whatever.
We'll be making a trip to Fry's Electronics because you haven't paid us yet to stop saying your name on our podcast. And in our show, we'll be buying some extra headsets.
I'm quite stoked to go to Fry's Electronics because there's no Fry's Electronics where I live. I have never been to Fry's Electronics.
You should see this badass hat they got me at Fry's. That thing is awesome.
It's a little rainbow propeller hat that says Hacker on it.
Yeah. I love that thing. I'm going to put a motor on the beanie so it spins all the time.
Yeah. Sard and I went to Fry's Electronics down in Redondo Beach, California.
We did go to Fry's Electronics down there.
What did we buy at Fry's Electronics, Sard?
At Fry's Electronics, I bought a bunch of adapters and a new webcam, some other random shit.
Fry's Electronics provided me with these nice set of headphones that I'm wearing right now. And RU was able to buy some microphone adapters from Fry's Electronics.
Wow.
I believe RU also got groped by the TSA on his way to the States.
Yeah.
He's the only one with an interesting travel story, and he's not here to tell it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we could talk about how somebody almost died, but that's, that was...
We're trying to keep the show not depressing this time, Morps.
We are?
Allegedly.
I've got the wrong show notes, and I just...
fuck it, how'd they die? Almost.
it seems no one really realized BMI can play into how much you can drink.
Oh, God.
And there could have been a near-death experience involved.
We brought them back.
They live.
Sort of. Anyways.
If you can call this life.
All right. So, first one up. This story is from news.sky.com. North Korea has assembled a team of 3,000 cyber agents, including hundreds of trolls, whose job it is to undermine morale in South Korea, according to a think tank. The computer experts spread propaganda by hacking into South Korean websites and linking them to pro-North Korea outlets. The trolls, believed to number about 200, reportedly use identities stolen from South Korea internet users to post comments on web forums. The North has established a team of online trolls at the United Front Department of the Reconnaissance General Bureau. How many words do they have to put on that bureau name? Ryu Dong-ru of the Police Policy Institute told a seminar at the Seoul Press Center, according to South Korea's Chosun newspaper. The think tank said the United Front Department hacks into South Korean websites through servers based in 19 countries using constantly changing IP addresses to avoid detection. It said the trolls were part of a 3,000-strong cyber army, and they claimed they posted up more than 41,000 items of propaganda in 2012, up from 27,000 the year before. An estimated 300 North Koreans are trained in cyber warfare every year, compared to just 30 in the South. Lin Jong-in of Korea University told Chosun. They are picked from the elite middle schools in the North Korean capital, Pyongyang, and spend 10 years honing their skills at the Kim Sung Military University, Mr. Musaver University, or Kim Chuk University of Technology, the newspaper reported. It's really hard trying to say all these Korean names when we've been drinking all day. In June, internet security company Symantec suggested a string of attacks on South Korean websites dating back 4 years for the work of a gang known as Dark Sail. Uh-oh. Uh-oh. You hear the noise that came off that Bluetooth mic when you moved it? although it could not confirm the group is run by North Korea, several major broadcasters and banks in South Korea, as well as the country's presidential office, have been targeted. So I don't know about you guys, but I think this is really freaking funny that North Korea is hiring trolls to go spread propaganda online.
So as far as that bureau name goes, from what I've understood, the more words in the name, the higher the honor.
When did North Korea get electricity?
When did they get internet?
Yeah. Can
they beat South Korea in StarCraft yet?
If that ever happens, there could be war.
Yeah. No, this sounds like the best job ever. I mean, especially up there. I mean, you could be on a nice cold border, you know, with a rifle, walking around with somebody ready to shoot you, or you could be in an office somewhere, you know. You missed your opportunity. Sorry, Fox.
They just need to hire 4chan is what I'm hearing.
Yeah, it sounds like that's what they've done.
And yeah, actually elite middle school.
They're actively training the next generation of Korean 4chaners is what it sounds like to me.
My question is, are they actually trolling, or is this just propaganda? Because I feel like they've kind of just added the word troll into the news article to make it more interesting. You know, this sounds more like just your standard kind of covert propaganda scheme where, you know, you see this sort of thing happen all over the place. And it's highly effective. You know, you got 200 people doing, what is it, like 40,000 posts in a year. Even if it's just a couple of those that get picked up by a lot of people, that can change the mindset of a lot of people.
This is North Korea. There's nothing subtle about them. It is just state-run propaganda. And it's probably really obvious that they're doing this.
I just love the concept, again, that, you know, even if they're not doing, you know, traditional trolling, you know, going on there, posting things, trying to piss people off, but actually actively spreading propaganda. Well, propaganda is a form of trolling, really. You're trying to get a reaction out of somebody. It's just propaganda is a more controlled reaction. Trolling, you're going for, you know, the he mad. So, I don't know. I kind of think it is a form of trolling. But either way, North Korea is paying people to go on South Korean websites and post nasty shit.
You know,
our laundry maid has returned.
Thank you, slave. Just put it on the bed.
Very clean.
That's not creepy at all.
Are you? Do you need more lemon pledge?
Why, you low prince?
Yeah, I'm actually going to series it up a little bit and blame the Chinese. I think they are just farming out their schools to the North Koreans so they can blame it on somebody other than themselves. So it's just maybe just a little bit of an excuse for them to get in there and put a whole bunch of guys on the North Korean payroll so they have a plausible deniability.
Getting a lot of handling noise on somebody's mic. My mic's off.
Okay.
The U.S. just automated ours. Didn't we come up with some bots to just troll Facebook to upvote anything that the current administration or any other administration likes?
Yeah, probably.
No, that's true. That is happening right now. Not only Facebook, but Reddit, any social media website where they can get out, they are hiring people to post pro-American stuff because a lot of people on the internet, at least, are pissed off about what's going on.
I could see that. So, right, next article up here. This one is from PCMag.com. Mark and Lauren Gilbert told ABC News that the voice of a creepy man was coming from their baby monitor, which was also equipped with a camera. According to the... I should point out, RU sent me this story.
He's dancing.
Yes. According to the report, on August 10th, Mark Gilbert heard strange noises in his daughter Allison's room while she was sleeping. As he and his wife entered, the strange voice began calling the girl a fucking moron, telling her to wake up, you little slut, before shouting expletives at the parents. I ran over and disconnected and tried to figure out what happened, Gilbert told ABC. I couldn't see the guy. All you could do was hear his voice and that he was controlling the camera. Neither the girl, who is deaf, nor Gilbert's 3-year-old son, Ethan, heard the commotion or woke up. So this guy figured out the frequency of a baby monitor and started cussing at the child who just happened to be deaf.
Make the story.
It's like, well, it's okay. She didn't hear it. While the police were not involved, Gilbert did call his internet service provider, who suggested that he change the monitor's passwords. Moving forward, it doesn't matter since Gilbert said he is leaving the gadget permanently unplugged. The incident shook the family and suggested concerns that similar situations had occurred without their knowledge. It's quite possible that this has been going on for more than one day, Gilbert said. Security vulnerabilities exist. And indeed they do. The cyberpunk managed to hijack the monitor. What they actually called the guy who got in the monitor a cyberpunk. Cyberpunk managed to hijack the monitor, scan the room with the robotic camera eye, and make lewd comments, all from a robotic or from a remote location. But this isn't the first case of a smart home hacking. Earlier this month, a report surfaced that Japanese-made Satist smart toilet is susceptible to cyber attacks via a hard-coded Bluetooth pin vulnerability. So they forgot to rotate the pins in the Japanese toilets. I'm trying to figure out what you need a smart toilet for.
This is awesome. Some smart toilets actually like analyze your urine and fecal material and send reports to your doctor. So you hack a smart toilet, guy fails his drug tests for the rest of his life.
Well, this actually I skipped the last paragraph here. Apparently anyone with range of the Bode can gain access to its control functions. Paranormally haunting the toilet's automatic lid, built-in sound module, air purifier, or in-bowl spotlight.
For those times you really want to see what just came out of your ass.
So they can open and close the lid while you're using it.
Oh, God.
They can spray you with an automated bidet.
Now that would be funny.
You think in the middle of dropping a deuce and then you get hosed?
When I was a kid, there was this movie called Look Who's Talking, and the kid was getting potty trained, and there was a scene where he walked up to the toilet and it started talking to him. Hold on.
So you had
It traumatized the shit out of me as a kid, and
right, there we go.
You could reenact this whole scene with the flapper.
How the hell were you allowed to watch a PGR film when you were 5 years old?
PGR. Yeah. The hell's PGR?
Parental control.
PG.
Parental regulation. Yeah, PG. PGR. I'm doing VCR.
The G stands for regulation.
Yeah.
Because there's R-rated, there's PG.
Yeah, that's
rated.
It's PGR, PG, isn't it? In the
PG.
PG.
Yeah, G, PG, PG-13, R.
Yeah, PGR is 13 plus.
And C-17.
Parental regulation.
I don't think we have that over here.
We have it. I think we have back home.
Galaxy 15 rating of just MA.
So, what, you were like 5 and you were traumatized?
Something like that, yeah. I was an idiot as a kid.
I just imagine. I can just see Big now walking into the. Okay, guys, we're gonna build a puppet.
Oh, what a puppet!
Toilet
puppet.
Moving on. Scroll up the story. Did it say anything about the monitor being controlled via internet?
They don't know.
Why the fuck did they call the ISP about a baby monitor?
Well, they don't know, because I don't know if this thing is hooked into the internet or not. It sounds to me like the thing's got its own Wi-Fi, and I remember reading about how baby monitors, several of them were actually using VoIP protocols so that they could, work over IP.
Yes, these baby monitors, the one that you're talking about right now, one of their big features for selling to parents is that you can log on and view your child at home with its babysitter at any time. This is a massive feature for the selling of this baby monitor.
Oh, yeah, he probably got in for the... It's probably probably somebody from 4chan got in, guessed a password. And
I will bet any money they had an unsecured Wi-Fi in their house.
Yeah.
This is just a guy next door. Yeah, he's probably rubbing one out, screaming into the mic, And he sees it. Like, he sees this open thing. He's like, I'm gonna take advantage of this. And there's a child there. He's like, sup, B. And you know where I'm going with that. But hey, you wanted to do this show, Morps? All of us in the room,
but
close, personal.
Oh dear!
I could touch him.
That's just creepy.
It's got to be an internet enabled one though, because the range on one of those baby monitors is not far. Really, it's like either a guy hanging out in the street in front of the house or one of their immediate neighbors, if that. Because it's even iffy for it to reach that far.
I don't think they got it on just the baby monitor. A lot of them, you hook them up to your Wi-Fi, like your actual home network, and you can check on the kid on your smartphone.
Yeah, exactly. It's just
so
a
it's
Wi-Fi
just they
enabled
this connection
webcam.
Yes, it's somebody's guessed a device password, or worse, if you've got like a specific app or website you have to go to log in to your device, that means it's calling home somewhere, and somebody was probably just trolling, finding passwords or people who hadn't changed it or really dumb ones, or they like got on these people's Facebook pages and figured out like their dog's name or something. It's like, oh, there's your Wi-Fi password or
yep.
the mom, baby monitor password,
yep.
or they left it default. But, yeah, all right. I'm still trying to figure out why the Japanese built a toilet that automatically raises and lowers the lids and has a spotlight.
Apparently they have a really...
The auto air freshener is kind of a cool idea, though.
Yeah.
They were really... I've peeled some paint off some walls.
Wow. Okay, let's go on to the next story here. Rocket snailing right along here. This one is from Russia Today. As tensions worsen among the privacy-focused email users... Now, wait. This is horribly written. As tensions worsen among privacy-focused email users amid the escalating scandal surrounding government surveillance, a brief filed by attorneys for Google has surfaced showing that Gmail users should never expect their communications to be kept secret. Consumer Watchdog has unearthed a July 13, 2013 motion filed by Google's attorneys with regards to ongoing litigation challenging how the Silicon Valley giant operates its highly popular free email service. The motion, penned in the hopes of having the United States District Court for the Northern District of California dismiss a class action complaint against the company, says Gmail users should assume that any electronic or correspondence that's passed through Google servers can be accessed and used for a range of options, such as selling ads to customers. Just quoting from the brief, just as a sender of a letter to a business colleague cannot be surprised that the recipient's assistant opened the letter, people who use webmail-based email today cannot be surprised if their emails are processed by the recipient's email provider in the course of delivery. The motion reads in part, indeed, a person has no legitimate expectation of privacy in information he voluntarily turns over to third parties. So Google's saying because you turn it over to us, you have no expectation of privacy.
I don't see their analogy as being accurate with the office assistant. Google isn't the office assistant. They're the mailman. So if the mailman is opening my mail, I think I have a complaint. If my significant other or office assistant is opening my mail, perhaps less so. I'll fire them or, I don't know, not care.
Well, the rest of the story here. Elsewhere, Google's legal counsel says that plaintiffs are attempting to criminalize ordinary business practices that the company has implemented for nearly a decade, specifically the automated scanning of emails. According to Google, federal wiretap laws provide third-party email providers with liability from litigation if their practices are done in the ordinary course of business. So because Google has said it's their ordinary course of business to scan your emails, that you have no expectation of privacy. An electronic communication service such as Gmail must scan their emails sent to and from their system, says Google, as part of providing the services they're offering. No, they don't. I know how an email server works. This is wrong right here on the face of it. All you have to look at is the headers. That's what they're for. You don't have to read the rest of the email. While plaintiffs go to great lengths to portray Google in a sinister light, the complaint actually confirms that the automated processes at issue are Google's ordinary business practices implemented as part of providing the free Gmail service to the public. This is fatal to plaintiffs' claims, the attorneys write. Plaintiffs claim that Plaintiffs claim that an illegal interception is committed every time an email is sent to or from Google account is scanned, but the company counters that claim by saying automated scanning is not only outlined in terms of service agreement, which it actually is, but necessary for the product to function the way it does, which it's actually not. It's necessary for their ads. Gmail customers, the company claims, are contractually bound to Google's terms. Indeed, they devote much of the complaint to attacking the disclosures in the TOS and privacy policy in an effort to avoid this express contractual consent. In short, there is no legal interception or no illegal interception here because plaintiff's own allegations confirm that the alleged practices at issue are part of Google's ordinary course of business. So I'm going to stop reading there because the story goes on and on and on. But essentially, Google is saying that because it's in the terms of service and it's because what we do, it's what we do anyways, you have no expectation of privacy using Gmail.
Yeah, that's the short form of the EULA that nobody bothers to read. You know, and it really just comes down to, if you really care about having things be private, then you need to make an effort to learn or find somebody in your family or friend that can teach you how to secure this stuff. If it's important to secure it, do it. But otherwise, you know, they need to make money to run the company. That's how they do it, is by parsing your mail to sell you ads.
That's exactly right. I mean, it's in their terms of service. It's in their EULA. Then you're agreeing to that when you sign up an account. Just like Heavy said, plain and simple, if you don't want that to happen to your email, don't use it.
Well, okay, so how many of you didn't even bat an eye that first time you went to send a Google Mail with, I have attached, you know, some such and such file, and Google comes back to you, hey, you put the word attached in your email, but you didn't attach a file. You sure you want to send this? And you didn't think they were, like, looking at what you were writing then? I mean,
I flipped out, and I started reading their JavaScript to see what words they were scanning for.
Well, crockpot, backpack. Oh, hi, NSA.
Pressure cooker.
My big problem with this story is they're arguing that because we're doing something, it's okay for us to do it. Now, their argument that it's in the terms of use that we're going to be looking at your email, fine. Everyone should have read that anyway before they opened up an account. But saying, because we've been reading your email for 10 years, it's okay for us to read your email, is fucked up. Their argument should be, when you signed up, you agreed to let us scan your email, and just stop there. Because
exactly.
That's a valid argument.
Well,
because we've been fucking you over for 10 years, we're allowed to fuck you over. That's nothing. That's volunteering to be bolt gunned, as far as I'm concerned.
To be fair, it was in their terms of service like 10 years ago, too. Or, you know,
well,
however long
like
ago.
I said, if it's in their terms of service, that's the valid argument that they
yeah,
should be going
absolutely.
With. The whole bringing up the, because we've been fucking you for 10 years, we can fuck you. It's...
You can't scream rape now.
Yeah, it's stupid.
Not to mention you're using a third-party service anyways that you're not paying for.
Yeah.
Oh, you're paying for it. You're paying for it with ad views. It's the same way you pay for your television over the air.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike cable, which you pay for and still get ads.
But, you know, to be fair, like, Google themselves, I'm pretty sure there isn't anybody, like, sitting in a room reading your emails or anything like that. It is
no,
just,
it's a script.
It's an automated process. They're using it to target you with ads. Or, you know, do the attachment stuff, all that other sort of stuff. And if, like, sharing that content with, you know, certain governmental organizations and stuff like that, they wouldn't be telling you about that. That's the sort of stuff that you really should be concerned about, that sort of sharing of information that can actually be used against you. And that's the sort of stuff that you wouldn't even be told about. The stuff that they're telling you about is pretty benign. Like, it's for advertising. It's for, you know, just running their business, which kind of makes sense. But yeah, the stuff you got to be concerned about is the stuff they're not telling you.
That's what I'm wondering. In their EULA, do they say, you know, we're going to store your email in searchable format to be shared with, you know, under subpoena request or something like that for a certain amount of days or not?
No, they're not going to say that because they're storing your email. They always push the whole archive your mail, don't delete it.
Yeah.
So, but the way the law is written, they don't need a wiretap to get any emails that are 120 days old and stored on something not your personal computer. So they don't need it in their EULA. It's in the law.
Hmm.
Can anybody here recommend a good service to use for securing email?
Yes, build your own.
Okay.
Well, oh, there was one.
Oh, I know. Torment. Oh, wait.
Lava bit. No.
Oh.
So you're saving more, so you need to build your own email server?
I think that's going to be one of the next steps for G15. As we get stuff moved over to the dedicated server, I think I'll eventually set up our own dedicated email server and move off.
Or what about encryption? I mean,
well, you can encrypt it on the disk.
Yeah.
If you want something slightly more private, paid email services, they at least don't actively scan. and a lot of them have started putting up, we haven't gotten a subpoena from the NSA to give them your crap. Because they can't say that they have, so they just start announcing that they haven't, just bullshit. So that you can keep that up.
Well, the other thing to do is to start treating your email account like a disposable cell phone, so every time you do anything questionable with it, you just destroy it and make a new one.
10minutemail.com.
So, everybody got what they want in on that one? Let's go on to this Ars Technica story here. It's, again, beating up on Google. Google developers have confirmed a cryptographic vulnerability in the Android operating system that researchers say could generate serious security glitches on hundreds of thousands of end-user apps, many of them used to make Bitcoin transactions. The weakness in Android's Java cryptographic architecture is the root cause of a Bitcoin transaction that reported was exploited to pilfer about $5,720 worth of Bitcoins out of a digital wallet last week. The disclosure, included in a blog post published Wednesday by Google security engineer Alex Kublin, was the first official confirmation of the Android vulnerability since Ars and others reported the issue last weekend. Kublin warned that other apps might also be compromised unless developers changed the way they access so-called PRNGs, short for pseudo-random number generators. We have now determined that applications which use the Java cryptographic architecture JCA for key generation, signing, or random number generation may not receive cryptographically strong values on Android devices due to improper initialization of the underlier PRNGs. He wrote, applications that directly invoke the system-provided OpenSSL PRNG without explicit initialization on Android are also affected. So, Android OpenSSL certs are affected by this. Their numbers are not sufficiently random, so people could guess them, which means they can guess what your encryption keys are. Apps that establish encrypted connections using the HTTP client in Java.NET classes are not vulnerable. The confirmation came a few hours after researchers from security firm Symantec warned that hundreds of thousands of Android apps may be affected by the vulnerability. By Symantec's count, as many as 360,000 programs rely on the secure random call, which is one of the programming services for generating random numbers by the JCA. Contrary to many earlier reports, the flaw affects all versions of Android, not just 4.2 and earlier. Android security engineer Adam Ludwig told Ars. So I'm going to quit reading that there. Pretty much what that means is that for generating secure cryptographic functions, the random number generator that is used in Android is not very good, so it's possible to predict what the number would be, and therefore you can predict what the keys are going to be when Android is setting up an SSL connection, and that's apparently how somebody managed to swipe a Bitcoin wallet worth $5,700-some-odd. I don't know why somebody was keeping their Bitcoins on their phone.
Yeah, I'm going to say that they've been warning people for a long time you need to encrypt your wallet and you need to make sure that it's in a secure place, probably on a flash drive somewhere, not on your phone that's connected to the internet all the time. You know, this is something that got discovered. Google had a pretty robust way for people to report errors, and they do tend to do a fairly decent job of getting around to fixing them, but it's just a matter of time. I mean, it'll get fixed, but I wouldn't trust your Bitcoin wallet out of mobile. Just don't do that.
Well, it just brings up the, in my mind, the question of mobile security and these Android and iPhone cell phones. I mean, it's essentially a mini computer in your pocket, so it's got to be secured like a computer. You know, there's going to be vulnerabilities out there for them. You've got to be aware of what is going on with them and what's going on with them on your network and the available vulnerabilities out there for them. I mean, I just found out a couple weeks ago about the smartphone pen testers framework. I'm going to start playing around with that and see what I can learn from it.
I would suggest starting with SSL keys, because apparently it hadn't been fixed.
Apparently,
now,
yeah.
Actually, this is a big problem with Android phones, that you don't get system updates on a lot of them. Like my S3, the last update Samsung has put out is for 4.1, and you can go get a custom ROM for 4.3 now. So you've got a lot of smartphones that will never get fixed.
Yeah, that's the other thing, because it's up to the manufacturer and the service provider.
They don't want to fix the old one. They want you to go buy a new one.
Exactly. They don't care. So
the carriers all have their finger in it and need to do their verification, too, on their network. So you got another month ahead there.
Because they want to put their spyware or their apps into it, Verizon Mobile Access and whatever, all that crap in it.
So, this will eventually get fixed, but in the meantime, you're going to have to... the thing is, this can be fixed by apps using a different library to generate random numbers for these calls, but most developers have no clue how to do that. They're just using the built-in calls, and if you got to go swapping libraries, unless somebody's specifically written the library to be a drop-in replacement for the broken Java one, they're going to have to redevelop a lot of code. And most developers aren't going to want to do that. Or more to the point, a lot of apps aren't even actively developed. They're thrown out on the store. Then the developer makes their $1,000 or whatever off the sales, and that's it. They don't come back to it.
Checking a point here, Morps. There's a reason why you just have a burner and a laptop.
Well, that's true.
If you're getting burnt by your carrier, and you're being forced to update because they're not willing to secure their stuff. Send a message with your feet. Dump your provider, dump your smartphone. I know it hurts and it's inconvenient.
Or you can get a cell phone that's a couple of years old and just have it, $35 cell phone wouldn't be too much to burn.
Yeah.
But like Marp said, if those older cell phones, some of them, they don't always get patched.
You use it for one thing and toss it away.
Well, yeah, it depends on what you're going to
need. Well, how about
you? Back to understanding what you're going to
do the Breaking Bad thing and just snap the phone in half after every phone call?
No, it's to the point where, what are you doing with your phone? Have a look at your tech. How do you use your tech? Is my phone, my tablet, and my laptop as well? Or do I need to actually, purchase separate devices and use them as they were meant to be?
What's the bare minimum?
I own a camera, not a phone. I own a computer, not a phone. I buy a phone if I need one. You know what I mean?
What's the bare minimum you need for tech?
Well, yeah, use the tech the way that you want it to be used. Don't let the tech use you. And don't let the providers tell you how to use your tech.
The problem here is not a use of the tech. The problem here is that stuff specifically developed for smartphones, the library isn't very good, so suddenly there's holes in it. This isn't, you're using your smartphone in a way you shouldn't use it. This is something is broken.
Yeah, but the average user isn't going to make sure that the programmer that wrote their particular app has a properly, random number generator in there that, maybe they're going to write their own or pull their own from another source.
And to be fair to developers, they didn't know anything was wrong with it until a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, there's always going to be exploits, and not all of us are on the bleeding edge of it. This is the reason I stay away from the cellular device, for the simple fact that I'm not up on the exploits on it and how to jailbreak them. So if I'm going to have a tablet or a computer, I'm going to have one of them. If I'm going to have a camera, I'm going to have one of them. Yeah, it's exponential in money to have multiple devices and carry them around, but sometimes being a little bit Captain Paranoia here, sometimes it's better to have things devoid of each other and not all wrapped up into one. We're being deluded into thinking that we need to have all devices in one. I don't think we do. Maybe you just need to harden the fuck up and carry a pack. Carry a belt rig. It's not that, tablets... Even if you got a smartphone, what if it's not an actual phone? What if it's your walk-around computer? Secure it the best way you can, jailbreak it, do what you need to do, and have just a burner phone for regular phone calls. They're so light, you could carry both.
I would actually say that you could probably keep the all-in-one phone. You have to evaluate what you're doing with the phone, right? So if you have a financial tool like Bitcoin... You don't put it on your mobile. You know it's insecure or it's potentially insecure. You leave a Bluetooth open. Somebody has access to your phone or Wi-Fi. I would say you would evaluate it. You say, well, fine. If I'm playing, word with friend, it doesn't matter. If I'm sending a text message about, you know, the play that my daughter's into, aunt, whoever, that's fine. You can do those things. Those don't really matter if they get out. But if you have a financial tool, so you're not going to use your NFC wallet on your smartphone. You're not going to use your, you know, in-app, put a credit card on your phone to make purchases on the phone. You're going to have, or use a debit card with a limit on it so they can't steal that much from you. Evaluate the danger to your financial condition or, you know, your personal or secure condition and make that choice. You don't have to carry separate pieces, but you do have to think about what you're doing, which is kind of a life rule that everybody should follow.
You know, there's definitely something to be said for having multiple separate devices that each have their own individual use, and that's redundancy. You know, if you have a smartphone and you use that for everything and that breaks down, you're done. You don't have any access to anything. But, you know, if you've got your laptop and, you know, you've got your cell phone and everything like that, well, you know, your cell phone breaks down, well, that's fine. You still have your laptop, hop online, go to Skype or something like that. Like, there's backups. But in regards to, like, using Bitcoin and stuff like that on your mobile phone, you know, I think that's a horrible idea because, one, you're not really hosting your own wallet. Like, this wallet is going to be on somebody's server because you can't actually... crunch the numbers.
You can use a phone as your flash drive. I mean,
yeah, but it's, you know, you're generally relying on somebody else's server. And, you know, it's fine to use, but really only put as much money on there that you're comfortable to lose. You know, you have your secure wallet somewhere, and you go throw like $50 worth or something on there for your day-to-day purchases. And if you lose it, that's, you know, it's unfortunate, but it's not the end of the world.
Well, okay. I think. Yeah, I think we're making a different argument here. You know, are you arguing for the total separation of everything? And Heavy has an interesting point of evaluating what you're doing, and that's a good thing to keep in mind. But I mean, everything has vulnerabilities. I can hack your laptop as well as I can hack your fucking phone, right? I mean, that happens. But your phone is way more connected than your laptop most of the time. A lot of people just leave the Bluetooth and Wi-Fi and NFC on because that's convenient. You know, the cell phone is always connected to a mobile provider all the time, unless you kick on airplane mode or pull the battery. Whereas your laptop, you can usually disconnect it from everything, and I can lock it. Conversely, I can lock a laptop down a lot better than I can a phone. So that comes down to, you know, Heavy had a good point of evaluating it. But I'm not going to say don't carry a cell phone because it could be hacked, because anything could be hacked. I mean, that's, you know, they're hacking Japanese toilets, for God's sake. I mean, anything can be fucking hacked.
My take on this story is slightly different. Android is new enough, we had already started moving a lot of our things to smartphones. So they already knew that these apps were marketed and their phone was being purchased, not just as a phone, but as a mobile platform for internet banking, for credit card transactions, for tons of crap. So I think they should have just been paying attention when they originally wrote the code. Does no one test this crap?
Or did they use the wrong function or something to actually...
It's the pseudo-random number generator is not very good. It's giving predictable numbers.
So it should be just pure random. It actually follows a pattern.
Right, which makes your encryption keys predictable.
Which means anybody can route it back and just
if they manage to catch what it is, it's possible that they could predict what key. Now, they usually need to see a couple of transactions to pull this off. It's not like you can just, you know, boom, boom, pop, it's done. No, it just means that if you know it's an Android app, the key they're using might be predictable, so you can start running through the list, right? You might be able to generate, you know, the probable keys, you know, maybe the first probable keys it's going to come up, and you can, you know, try them. So it's not like, oh, it's broken, don't use it, run away screaming, but it does mean that you have to realize that your communications could be intercepted, especially by somebody with time and resources on their hands. You know, again, this is a new problem. It's a vulnerability that's popped up. And it comes from their implementation of this Java library. So either they need to fix this library and have everybody rebuild apps who've ever used it, or you need some sort of an operating system level patch. and you know that's not, I mean, yeah, you can push it and say, oh, look, this app's advertising that they fixed this problem. They used, you know, a different library. And that's great for that app. But what about the app on my phone that's never going to get updated because the developer walked away, you know, and is done with it? Or what about everybody who's, you know, if they do an operating system level fix, well, what happens to the phones that aren't going to get updated? Because some people just don't update their phone, and other phones don't get updates. So I liked Heavy's answer of evaluating what you're doing and keeping it in mind, but I don't knock the concept of using a smartphone just because it happened to have a vulnerability.
The problem with that, though, is it requires user education, and we all...
Everything requires fucking user education. Why do you think I have a job?
It comes down to people need to understand the tech that they're using. It can be used for a hell of a lot more than just Facebook and Twitter and texting, you know, your 13-year-old girlfriends or whatever, you know?
Good luck but trying to teach a user that.
Yeah, they'll always invent a better idiot.
There is a cure for stupid, but you usually end up doing 20 to 30 years in prison for it.
Yeah. I'll put a call out to the guys that discovered this vulnerability and you know, for reporting it. You know, that's kind of a good thing that got put in there. I really think, you know, maybe we could look at Google being a little bit more receptive on the whole open source thing and actually run it more like an open source project, where they actually bring other people's ideas into there than actually do, like, releases, you know, and have, you know, folks that actually go through and
they do
manage this stuff just to get an idea that this stuff is missing and fix it.
Heavy, Android is open source. They publish the source all the time.
Does Google take in... You know, do they just leave a copy out there for the open source community, or do they?
Yes, they take patches all the time.
Okay.
There was a big stink a few weeks back because people discovered the NSA had contributed patches to Android. So, oh God, it's rooted. It's like, no, it's the SE Linux crap, idiot. But okay. I never covered the story because it was too stupid. But they take patches all the time, dude.
The problem isn't their patching; it's that our phones don't get regular updates.
That's where it was.
The carriers is where the issue lies.
So you guys have a choice as consumers: go out and buy products that get the patches more regularly. So you're going to buy, unfortunately, you're going to buy Google branded stuff, and in order to get the most update to Android, or you're going to find a phone or something that somebody does a really good, custom ROM for that they update regularly. So really, that's going to be kind of the choice that you have to make. And again, we're back to the education thing. What are you doing? You know, what are you buying?
All right, we're going to end up arguing smartphones all night, which is fine. But let's do this last story here because it's from Australia. News.com.au. The U.S. State Department, which has the slogan "Diplomacy in Action," sure it does, spent $6,900,000. That's in Australian money, to try and buy fans in social media. The agency's inspector general said in a report, the State Department's Bureau of aren't we broke? How are they spending this much money on this crap? The State Department's Bureau of International Information Programs spent the money to increase the likes count from 2011 to March 2013. The Washington Examiner reported. In other words, the U.S. State Department is paying people to click like on Facebook. They are running, they're running social media botnets. Many in the bureau criticize the advertising campaigns as buying fans who might have once clicked on an ad or liked a photo but have no real interest in the topic and never fully engaged further. The Inspector General reported. The State Department's Facebook page likes increased during the spending from 100,000 to more than 2 million. Well, yeah, you're paying people. And to 450,000 on Facebook's foreign language pages. Despite the increases, the IG said that their spending did not reach the Bureau's target audience, mainly older and more influential people. Only about 2% of the department's fans engaged in the pages by liking, sharing, or commenting. In September last year, Facebook changed its approach to users' news feeds, and the costly fans campaign became much less valuable, the IG reported. The Bureau must now pay for sponsored ads to keep its content visible, even to people who have already liked the pages. The absence of a department-wide public diplomacy strategy trying to prioritize Fuck this story.
I'm screwed
the rest of the story. They're just saying that, oh, they suck, they're wasting money, which is true, because the Department of State is paying people to click like on Facebook.
Not only
what does
playing
that do
to
for them? What the hell's the point?
It's masturbatory, as far as I can tell.
Jesus.
They're paying opinion? Australians to click right, like, right?
Yeah.
So it's not even Americans. Oh, well.
So the government...
Hey, are you? You might get a job now.
So the government is so unpopular, it has to pay people to like it.
I'll give you $5 if you'll be my friend. I mean, that's what it is.
And it's not even people that can vote for them.
It's purely, you know, PR. It's purely we want to look good. So look at all of our Facebook likes. See, they like that we're reading their email. I mean, we read their email, got their Facebook password, and liked us for you. Liking pages.
I think that would be a cheaper way of doing it.
I'm going to scoot you in like that. Hey. Sorry, I'm actually adjusting levels while we're doing this. I'm trying to get ready for my show.
Jin's more important.
Are you? Sorry, get off the mic.
So is my government paying people to like them?
Apparently, yes.
I thought it was our government paying your people.
Yeah, I mean
I
that's.
Like you. You like me?
I like you.
I'm not paying you.
You should tell the government. Are you? They'll pay you.
I don't know that it says who they're paying. It's just that they paid almost $700,000 for people to go click the like button on Facebook.
That's embarrassing.
Yes, it is. That's why we're covering it. So, yeah, I mean, it's pathetic is what it is.
Can we go through and fire people at, I don't know, every bureaucracy we have?
You know, the way those organizations are structured, it'd probably be easier to shoot people than fire.
Yeah, that would require actual fire, like literal.
I shouldn't
flame.
Have said that. I'm sorry. Nobody go shoot government bureaucrats.
So for 30 cents a round, I could probably save us a few hundred million dollars.
Some of us have to fly home, I hope you remember.
Yeah, it's all right. I'm driving, so I'm good to go.
We're done. I've got no digital dojo this week between traveling and Gen Con. I haven't had a chance to build or play with anything. Keep sending suggestions for the dojo, though. I'll go over the good ones.
I would like to bring up. Fry's Electronics has a lot of kit that you can buy and play with as far as building little personal robots. Don't bring them to Gen Con because oblivious assholes will step on them.
Yeah.
But
or the TSA might think they're a bomb.
So, obviously, of course, listen to the stream. We're always working on it. We're on it right now. Pure Decking every Thursday. Shoot the Noise on Wednesdays. And the Missing Dialogues on Tuesdays. Galaxy 15 Radio site. The Twitter handle. The Galaxy 15 Radio sim on OS Grid. The feedback forum. The subreddit. Oh, yeah, and I guess you could listen to IHN on Saturday. And so I'm going to close things out now with Patient Zero's Critical Stop.
Hold on. Before you go, I just want to remind everybody to shop at Fry's Electronics.
Oh, for God's sake.
Fry's
That's
Electronics.
That's right.
Fry's
Electronics, ladies and gentlemen. A magical plethora of tech.
How much were the robot kits? Those could be fun.
I don't know. $150
Let's dance. Fuck you, Microsoft. Fuck you right in the ear.